McIlroy has welcomed as a long time coming his victory at the Masters in Augusta, which completed his career Grand Slam. BBC News.
Read this evening by Lisa Costello. Comedy next, as David Mitchell's panellists tell a bunch of lies to smuggle the truth past their opponents. This evening's subjects include the Middle Ages, the human voice and geese. They'll be honking through the unbelievable truth here on Radio 4 after this.
I'm obliged to inform you.
On BBC iPlayer.
I will take revenge on Tommy Shelby.
Even if I walk away, I'm still a target.
These aren't crime dramas.
Are you serious?
I'm sorry, what are you saying, mate?
They're a dose of danger.
Come on!
That's fighting talk, that.
That's good, isn't it? That's really good.
Kin, Peaky Blinders, This City Is Ours, and loads more.
The future belongs to us.
Whoever you are, whyever you stream. BBC iPlayer.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Please welcome Lou Sanders, Holly Walsh, Marcus Brigstock and Tony Hawkes. The rules were as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths, which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Marcus Brigstock. Marcus, of course, presents the show Jazz Family Trees on Jazz FM. And if you like jazz as much as me, that will be of no interest whatsoever. Marcus, your subject is the Middle Ages, a period in European history from the collapse of the Roman Empire in the 5th century to the period of the Renaissance in the late 15th century. Off you go, Marcus. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
The most famous and celebrated man in the Middle Ages successfully jumped a horse and carriage over six wagons, landing safely on a wooden ramp on the other side. Medieval Knievel is still talked about. To this day. The Middle Ages turned out to be a time of bounty, fun and prosperity for all. Pineapples hung from many a tree and fat medieval squirrels gorged themselves on them.
That's true. Pineapples would have grown during the medieval time somewhere in the world.
Yes, that's true. I don't think that's what Marcus said.
He did say that.
Well, yes, he said that. That's very interesting. Because actually what he said is a truth. But yeah. You've interpreted it as a different truth, and what you're saying is that pineapples existed in medieval times, but just not in England. We're thinking about England in the Middle Ages.
Well, that's very Eurocentric, or even Britain-centric.
Britannocentric.
Yeah.
Anglo-centric.
Yeah, because I only think of...
This is Radio 4.
Yeah, I'm going to take it further. I'm saying it's London-centric. I don't see even outside the M25, which didn't even exist then.
No, but they'd started building it.
A small queue had started to develop. Yes, you're right, but not for the reason you might expect. As though pineapples don't grow on trees, pine cones do, and in medieval times, pine cones were called pineapples, literally the fruit of the pine. The exotic fruit that we now know as a pineapple was given the name after it was brought back from the New World in the 17th century, and based on its resemblance to a pine cone. The word pine cone first appeared in the 1690s to replace pineapple, which had previously just meant pine cone.
The middle of the Middle Ages was celebrated on August the 10th, 976 AD. Signs and bunting went up all over Europe saying, "Halfway there, guys." Much of the fun was sponsored by Kellogg's, who slaughtered thousands of pigs just to cheer everyone up. Before they were synonymous with flattened, toasty corn, Kellogg's were notorious pig killers, hence the name. And lucky breakfasters still sometimes find bits of snout, belly and crackling in cornflakes to this day. Around 98% of the medieval understanding of medicine and the human body stands to this day. A modern GP's...
Lou.
I do think that's true.
98% of medieval
medicine
stands.
Yeah, but I don't know why everyone's looking at me as if I'm off my head.
Yeah. Well, it's because medieval medicine was notoriously ineffective and counterproductive. That's why. And everyone's thinking,
do you know why I thought... Yeah. I wasn't really listening to what he said, but he sped up and I thought he was nervous and I thought I was really good at reading emotions. Yeah.
A modern GP's handwriting is a charming tribute to medieval illiteracy. Bald baldness was seen as a moral failing, but could be cured by letting a goose poo on your head and rubbing it in. It was...
Tony.
The baldness thing, moral failure.
It How wasn't.
How dare you?
No.
The goose is true.
The goose is true.
The, yes,
is
the
true.
Moral failure isn't true. The goose poo
the
is
goose
true.
The goose is true.
Yes. Yes, a medieval cure for baldness, popularised by the Vikings, involved rubbing goose guano into the scalp.
Medieval goose poo was called Goosan 2000. Middle Ages doctors understood that erections were caused by a build-up of pressurised air, and there were legitimate fears that an unattended tumescence was likely to pop. It was well understood that women could be talked out of menstruation if you kept at it for 4 or 5 days.
Lou.
That's got to be true. I still believe that today.
That was not believed to be true.
Oh, shame.
I'm sorry, Lou.
Travelling musicians were so commonplace in England that in 1014 there was a cull. The group of minstrels were rounded up near Wigan and beaten to death with their own instruments. No one complained, though. As I believe is still the law in the UK, murdering a wandering musician was a very minor crime, which is why Ed Sheeran still seems so skittish.
Oh, I feel like something Holly. In that is true.
Yeah?
I am going to go for some musicians got killed with their own instruments.
No, that's not true. Marcus.
The Middle Ages lasted until 1993, but only if you live in Cornwall.
And that's the end of Marcus's lecture. So, Marcus, at the end of that round, you've managed to smuggle 3 truths past the rest of the panel, which are that before they became synonymous with flattened toasty corn, Kellogg's were notorious pig killers. Kellogg was a name that originated in the Middle Ages and means killer of hogs.
It
was a name for butchers of the time. The second truth is that middle-aged doctors understood that erections were caused by a build-up of pressurised air. Yes,
I don't think you should call them middle-aged doctors.
Medieval doctors.
Yeah.
Medieval doctors in their 40s. that a penile erection was believed to be caused by pressurised air. It was a theory of the ancient physician and philosopher Galen and remained widely accepted until Leonardo da Vinci discovered that erections were in fact caused by the blood. And how he discovered that, let's not ask. The third truth is that murdering a wandering musician was a very minor crime.
Oh, you're so close. I knew there was something in there.
Travelling musicians or medieval minstrels were greatly admired by the public for their musical talents, but regarded as sinful by the church. And that means, Marcus, you've scored 3 points. In the Middle Ages, people used balls of hay and a scraper stick instead of toilet paper. It was quite effective, but it did often lead to a medical condition known as shredded anus.
That was one of Kellogg's first cereals, wasn't it?
OK, we turn now to Holly Walsh. Holly, your subject is geese, any of numerous long-necked waterfowl, usually larger than ducks and smaller than swans. Off you go, Holly.
Strap in while I tell you all about geese. The word comes from the Greek gi, meaning winged, and ease, meaning bastard. Because the goose is the most annoying bird in the world, if you don't count my ex-wife, right, lads? In fact, the word goose used to be slang for prostitute because just like a goose, the average household could only afford a sex worker at Christmas or high holidays.
Lou.
Was a goose a word for a prostitute?
It was.
Ah.
Yes.
Don't ask me, I knew that.
I don't think you did. I think you guessed.
No, yeah.
The term is believed to have originated from London's South Bank, where the competitive calls of prostitutes to young men crossing London Bridge were thought to resemble the screeches of geese.
That's far from being the only goose-based slang. Being bitten by a Winchester goose used to be a euphemism for catching syphilis, while a peck from a pink-footed goose was a euphemism for catching syphilis, and having a visit from Mother Goose was a euphemism for catching syphilis.
Tony.
One of those three is true. I'm going to go for the middle one.
A peck from the pink-footed goose.
The first one.
Bitten by a Winchester goose.
That one's definitely true.
That's the one you're going
yes.
for.
Yes.
Correct. Yes, in the 16th century, being bitten by a Winchester goose was a common euphemism for contracting syphilis. During this period, the church had significant control of the sex industry, with the Bishop of Winchester owning numerous brothels along the South Bank. Under the bishop's ownership, prostitutes were known as Winchester geese, and contracting a venereal disease, commonly referred to as being bitten by a Winchester goose, or having goosebumps.
There have been thousands of incorrect assumptions about geese over the years. For a long time, people thought that the grey goose was just a regular goose who was getting on a bit, and that barnacle geese hatched out of actual barnacles instead of eggs.
Marcus.
Yeah, weirdly, I think that's true about barnacle. I don't think it's true. I think it was believed to be true.
Yes, you're absolutely right. For hundreds of years, people thought barnacles were the embryos of geese and that barnacle geese hatched from these marine crustaceans. The misunderstanding arose due to the fact that before birds were known to migrate, barnacle geese were never seen to nest in Europe, and the patterns on the goose barnacle resemble those on the barnacle goose. Because barnacle geese were thought to be neither flesh nor born of flesh, they were allowed to be eaten by some churches on days when eating meat was forbidden.
That seems like a loophole.
Yeah, I think it was a loophole. Oh, yeah.
What did they think they were? Ghosts?
I suppose they thought they were like crustaceans.
But they're still flesh.
Yeah, but on the days you can't eat meat, you can eat fish. So I imagine that would stretch to prawns, mussels and stuff.
And barnacles.
I don't know, and barnacles.
Yeah.
But the thing with a barnacle, it's the best thing is to wait until it becomes a goose.
Oh, yes.
Holly.
Geese do have some uses. Professional badminton shuttlecocks are made from feathers from the left wings of geese, as the feathers from the right wing tend to just moan about how the game has got too woke these days.
Marcus.
Yeah, I think shuttlecocks are made from the left-winged... You know, when you hit them, they spin in one direction. I suddenly realised if the feathers came from both wings of the goose, it might just fly off.
Yeah.
That would be so sweet.
I mean, you'd have created perpetual motion, which would be useful for humanity, but ruined the game.
Yes.
Traditional badminton shuttlecocks are made from goose feathers, and only feathers from the left wings of geese are used in tournament shuttlecocks, as, according to shuttlecock manufacturer Yonex, feathers from a goose's left wing provide better aerodynamics.
Oh, no,
I don't know what happens to all of the feathers from the right wings of geese.
Duvets.
Yeah.
Duvets. So that's, well, think about that when you go to sleep. It's all right wing feathers.
The first commercially available board game was called Game of Goose. It involved taking turns to travel thousands of miles to somewhere a bit warmer before trying to mate with as many people as you could. It inspired several similar games and the Club 18 to 30 holiday. And that is everything you need to know about geese.
Thank you, Holly. Lou. A late buzz from Lou.
The game. Was the first board game called The Goose?
Game of the Goose?
Yeah.
I mean, you had the whole lecture had finished, Lou.
Yeah, but I was waiting to hear what the woman said, because I'm polite.
You were waiting until she finished her lecture.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what you've done with your politeness. That is the only truth that Holly had managed to smuggle past the panel. And now you want to take it away from her. You really want to do that?
Yeah.
You do. I'm sorry.
No, have it.
Well, yes, it is absolutely true. The Game of the Goose was the first commercially available board game. It's thought to originate from Italy in the 15th century and was hugely popular throughout Europe in the 17th and 18th centuries. The rules are similar to Snakes and Ladders. And that means, Holly, you've managed to smuggle no truths past the rest of the panel, which means you've scored no points. Next up is Lou Sanders. Lou, your subject is the human voice, the sound produced in a person's larynx and uttered through the mouth as speech or song. Off you go, Lou.
The human voice. Everyone with a human voice can be tracked back to dogs because we all started life as a little sausage dog called Ian with two eyes and one tail.
Anyone go for that?
Okay, Mariah Carey can sing in what's known as the whistle register. The only other mammal that can sing higher is a dolphin. Dolphins have performed with ocean colour scene, reef and seal.
Marcus.
Yeah, I imagine Mariah Carey can sing in whistle register.
Yeah, she can. Let's move on.
That's absolutely true. Other female singers to use the whistle register are Minnie Riperton, Ariana Grande, and Christina Aguilera. The only mammal capable of a higher register is a dolphin.
There's a song where Mariah Carey duets with Ariana Grande, and it's actually excruciating.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a dolphin, and no. I thought, wow.
They should have got a dolphin in, because that would have been amazing.
Can they also click?
I think you just really threw shade on two of the greatest singers of our time.
Threw shade?
Yeah.
This is going to be hard to explain, David, but imagine, I think the shortest route is going to be cast a shadow over.
All right.
So you still look baffled.
What was it I said that was rude?
Rather than give those two women a compliment of their great singing, you said, but can they click?
Yeah, well, you said you that you'd heard them doing a duet and you thought it was excruciating.
To be honest, I was just joining in with you.
Babies with a Scouse accent... Oh, this is a bit sad, actually, this bit. Babies...
Well, we'll all look forward to that.
Babies with a Scouse accent are given up for adoption more quickly than their Surrey counterparts, but Surrey babies turn out to be way more annoying in the long run.
Holly.
Babies can have Scouse accents. They can cry in a Scouse way.
Yeah.
Well, that is true, what you said, but that wasn't what Lou said.
Okay.
So I'm happy to not charge you a point.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great.
Should we all have a go at doing a Scouse baby? Here's my attempt.
Well done, Tony.
I have a tour coming up and I'll be playing Liverpool, so no.
Okay, so here we go. We're back
We're edging back towards usability.
So, anal. Anal is a genuine language spoken by thousands of people, but in my opinion, it needs an extra special person to speak it to you. Scientists have found that people are more likely to do what you want if you ask them in their right ear, which is why it was always so easy to get Van Gogh to do you a favour.
Marcus.
Yeah, I think it is easier to get people to do what you want if you say it in their right ear.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
You're absolutely right here.
Research from the University of Gabriel D'Annunzio in Italy found that humans are more likely to perform a task if addressed in their right ear and prefer to use the right side over the left when listening to verbal stimuli.
For me, it's comforting to know that Italian taxpayers paid for that research.
They're incredibly rare too, Italian taxpayers. There's only about three of them left.
The man who voiced Mickey Mouse was... The man who voiced Mickey Mouse for...
Tony.
Whatever she's about to say is true.
Okay.
That's why she stumbled. You see, she's nervous about this truth.
If it's lies, it doesn't matter what noise she makes. But she knows the truth.
Let's just see. Let's listen for it, ladies and gentlemen.
The man who voiced Mickey Mouse for 32 years married the woman who voiced Minnie Mouse. And if you think that's art imitating life, the man who voiced SpongeBob SquarePants went yellow from alcohol poisoning and drowned in his own fluids.
Tony, you are absolutely right. The man who...
What do you think is true about that?
What Tony said is the next thing you were going to say was true, and it was, and he gets the point.
Thank you very much.
The American voice actor Wayne Allwine, who voiced the character of Mickey Mouse for 32 years, married his co-star and voice of Minnie Mouse, Russie Taylor, in 1991.
In Japan, a man sued their national broadcaster for mental distress caused to him by the use of too many English words in their programmes. And on an island of Batang, the use of negative words is prohibited by a special law. And they won't hear a word against it.
Tony.
The negative law against negative words.
Not true.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's the end of Lou's lecture. Oh. And, late buzz there from Holly.
Sorry, the anal is a language. I'm pretty sure A Japanese guy may well have sued for too many English words.
Well, it's too late to buzz on the anal one.
I've literally been saving it up for the entire time for that last joke.
Do you want the other one?
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Yes. Yes,
you can have that one. It's absolutely true that in Japan, a man sued their national broadcaster for the mental distress caused to him by the use of too many English words in their programmes.
I always think about when people switch their radio on, and for the people who switch on at the exact moment David Mitchell says, it's too late to buzz on the anal one. I do think that will be a highlight. Yeah.
And the other thing you buzzed in that I didn't allow is that anal is a genuine language spoken by an indigenous tribe found in Manipur, India and Myanmar, and around 20,000 people speak anal today. And that means, Lou, you've scored 1 point.
Thank you.
The first ever football chant was written by classical composer Edward Elgar after he first observed that Spurs were not only shit, but that they knew they were. It's now the turn of Tony Hawks. Tony has been touring the UK with his show An Evening with Tony Hawks. The show is great value for money, as it actually feels much, much longer. Your subject, Tony, is children's TV, television programming specifically designed to entertain young viewers from toddlers to preteens. Off you go, Tony.
All dictators love children's TV and watch it incessantly. Saddam Hussein loved The Simpsons.
Lou.
I do think Saddam Hussein loved The Simpsons.
He didn't.
Colonel Gaddafi had tapes of the Wombles sent to him. And both Hitler and Mussolini had favourite cartoon characters. Mussolini adoring Donald Duck and Hitler loving Bugs Bunny. Although the Emperor Hirohito of Japan never achieved his lifelong ambition of getting a Blue Peter badge... He was obsessed by children's TV, and he was buried with his favourite Mickey Mouse watch.
Marcus.
Yeah, he was buried with his Mickey Mouse watch.
Yeah, he was. Emperor Hirohito of Japan was buried with his, quote, favourite personal effects, including his microscope and his Mickey Mouse watch.
In 1972, Noddy was voted most popular children's TV character of all time in Sweden. And is known by other names around the world. Doody in the Netherlands, Wee Wee in France, Mr. Noddy in Iceland, and Keith in Canada.
Lou.
Wee Wee.
Wee Wee.
Wee Wee!
Yes.
I think she was just asking to go to the toilet.
Enid Blyton's character Noddy is known as Wee Wee in France, Doddy in Iceland, Perselknips in Germany, and Hilitos in Spain.
Perselknips.
Perselknips. Knips. Perselknips.
Yeah. Is that your safe word? That's disgusting.
I'd say that would be an unsafe safe word, wouldn't it? Something that's that difficult to say.
Bob the Builder began on May the 17th, 1998, though he had promised to start 3 weeks early. Inveterate liar Pinocchio is known in France as Petit Pinoche, in Germany as Legende Holzern Lange Nase, and in the UK as Boris Johnson. Peppa Pig, real name Pepperami Pig, was originally banned in Malaysia because the word pepper in Malaysian means girlfriend.
Marcus.
Yeah, I think Peppa Pig was banned in Malaysia, but not for the reason you gave.
It wasn't banned in Malaysia.
Oh. Mm.
Though not for the reason he gave.
So no, sure.
An episode in which Peppa learns not to be afraid of spiders was banned in Australia.
Why?
Because in Australia, you should be afraid of spiders.
Scooby-Doo, real name Scoobert-Doo, was based on the real-life dog of writer Steve Goldstein. And Goldstein was inspired to write the series after his dog foiled a series of crimes committed...
Holly.
I reckon it was based on his actual dog.
No.
Ugh.
This'll tell you why. After his dog foiled a series of crimes committed by men dressed in implausible ghost costumes. Some children's TV characters go on to enjoy adult careers. Marge Simpson modelled naked for Playboy.
Marcus.
Yeah, I think she did.
She did.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
To mark the 20th anniversary of The Simpsons, Marge Simpson featured on the front cover of Playboy magazine. Her modesty is covered by the ears of the Playboy bunny, it says here. Copies of the magazine are currently being sold on eBay for around $750.
John Noakes became a town councillor. Rupert the Bear advertised socks in the Netherlands. And 90% of the Teletubbies became mercenaries in Putin's special operations.
Lou.
Rupert the Bear, I think.
Advertised socks in the Netherlands.
Either that or John Noakes.
Which?
Is it John Noakes?
Is that what you're buzzing for, John Noakes?
It's so tense, isn't it?
What do you think is true?
Rupert the Bear.
Rupert the Bear, final answer.
John Noakes, final answer.
No. John Noakes was not a town councillor. Lou, you've buzzed
Rupert
again.
Rupert the Bear.
No. Tony.
BBC children's TV most notable backstage disasters include the time in 1982 when Goldie the Retriever escaped the Blue Peter studio and dismembered Basil Brush. And the occasion in 1975 when Harry Corbett accidentally put sooty in a boil wash. Incidentally, I'm told Sooty and Sweep are today enjoying a happy retirement on the golf course. As club covers.
Thank you, Tony. So, Tony, at the end of that round, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that Mussolini adored Donald Duck. According to Mussolini's son, Romano, his father was a great fan of Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse. And the second truth is that Scooby-Doo's real name is Scoobert-Doo. The producer of Scooby-Doo, or Scoobert-Doo, Fred Silverman, revealed that he came up with the name from the syllables dooby-dooby-doo in Frank Sinatra's hit Strangers in the Night. And that means, Tony, you've scored 2 points. American parents have complained that exposure to Peppa Pig is turning their children British, using words like petrol instead of gas and lorry instead of truck. In fact, some American kids have become so British that they've started to show little or no interest in carrying out a school shooting. With only 3 fingers on each hand, Postman Pat is viewed as a gangster in Japan, where Yakuza gang members often have a finger amputated. Of course, it's ridiculous to compare the post office with an organised crime syndicate. Said a spokesman for Port of Venice. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with -4 points, we have Lou Sanders. In third place with -1 point, it's Tony Hawks. In second place with 0 points, it's Holly Walsh. And in first place with an unassailable 6 points, it's this week's winner, Marcus Brigstock. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tony Hawks, Holly Walsh, Lou Sanders and Marcus Brigstock. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
David Mitchell and panel will be back at the same time next week, and that's the truth. And tomorrow's 6:30 comedy is Meet David Sedaris. David is an award-winning writer, storyteller, and as it turns out, a big fan of walking.
Our record is 43 miles in a single day. 91,000 steps. Where did you do this? People ask when I boast about it. It's a question that baffles me. If someone told me he'd eaten 75 hot dogs in one sitting, my response wouldn't be, where?
Meet David Sedaris, tomorrow's 6:30 comedy here on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. Well, after the news, we're off to Ambridge, where Emma makes a valuable connection and plans are afoot for Neil.